The final race of the year is five lights away. And the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix is go! Max Verstappen's having to do something about Charles Leclerc. And that is brave from Verstappen because he knew he was on the back foot and he's found something in the second phase of the start to stay ahead of the Ferrari. George Russell was close there with Oscar Piastri. Oh, that was very, very tight there as you see. Piastri hanging on there. He's all over the back of Lando Norris, I should say. So Lando Norris on the charge. Verstappen, then Leclerc, then Piastri. Up a place goes Norris. That's getting tight on the apex of turn number five. Can Charles Leclerc do anything now? He's right in the wheel tracks. No DRS at this stage, but he's forcing a defensive shape. As in the background, Hamilton and Perez go very close. But this is for the lead of the Grand Prix. And Charles Leclerc's going to take it. Side by side, they go once again. Only momentarily. Once again, Verstappen's bravery on the brakes keeps him the lead.
He just will never let it go. That's what defines him as such a fighting, feisty world champion. But here comes Charles Leclerc. Once again, he'll have to go around the outside.
Well, it'd be something if you went around the outside of there and Verstappen knew it, hugging the inside line. But surely we weren't expecting this sort of pressure.
How did Leclerc not take the lead? Twice he was up the inside cleanly there, and Verstappen charged around the outside. Charles, I think, was maybe a little bit too kind to him in both of those cases. I thought Max might fly off the road at turn one, but he had the space and had the margin to do that.
Perez has a hunt at Hamilton.
Perez diving to the inside. Perez getting through, and that is ninth position. That is a replay of Lando Norris moving up to third position, and he was clearing Oscar Piastri. That was always going to be a matter of time. Sometimes it can be tactical into that corner. Sometimes you might wait for the second opportunity, because if you get past, the driver gets a chance for a right of reply. Russell has waited, has the momentum. Does he have the place? Got to go to the outside line. Can he get the move complete? Russell has got the position at the moment. Mid-corner, though, different story on the exit. It still belongs to Piastri, and there is a perfect illustration of how hard it is to go around the outside. Very, very close, beyond 200 miles per hour, and having to defend into six. Sergio Perez is going to make the place. Oscar Piastri's off the racing line. Perez looks like he's going to improve up to eighth position. Battles everywhere at the moment, certainly heading to turn number nine. The Mercedes closer than it's been at any stage. Still, Gasly is ahead behind. But what about the battle for fourth? Finally, the move is complete for George Russell. So Norris responding.
And Russell, he's headed in as well. And Russell's got the better stop.
And there you go for George Russell. So that's a big moment in the context of the Grand Prix. McLaren, who have the two best pit stops of the year, when it counted 5.1 seconds. And George Russell got one on track, gets one in the pit lane.
I've established my front wing. He looks up ahead of me.
Look, he came from a long way back, but as the Alpine was locking up, Hamilton, I think, has obviously been confused by it and just ran into the back of him.
Perez will want a clear, easy, efficient pass here to get past. He has the DRS. That gives you an idea of how effective it is, and that is slam dunk stuff. Up to sixth. Just looking at the comparison in lap time between Charles Leclerc and George Russell, it is ebbing and flowing. And there's the pass for Sergio Perez, up to fifth place. Through he goes, past Oscar Piastri. And this is Lewis Hamilton trying to get past. Fernando Alonso ahead. Fernando Alonso tries to squeeze, but he can't keep the champion behind. Seven-time champion Lewis Hamilton, two-time champion Fernando Alonso, two greats of the sport, and no real contest this time.
They just brake tested me. I got brake tested right before the brake
is on. It looked like he actually went offline and ended up off the race. Let's just see, did he have a moment here or what was happening? Oh yeah, he did actually slow down, trying to force Lewis to pass him ahead of the corner so he could get DRS.
To randomly hit the brakes way before, I don't think that's a smart move.
The identity of the top three still in the balance. You don't see many passes into turn five today. Fernando Alonso getting in there early, trying something different, because the straight line speed is barn door slow at the moment, and yet he's done enough, he's made it work. Racecraft again, pass complete.
Perez is going to have a bit of a say here in who wins between Ferrari and Mercedes. Sainz has got Hamilton with him now on track, so that shows how it's not gone well for Carlos Sainz. He's got to make another pit stop.
Perez is looking to the inside. Can he get it done? Norris trying to stay there. They make contact. That seemed to be happening at such slow speed. Perez seemed to have the place. Norris seemed to turn in super late, and they made clumsy contact on the apex of the corner.
He just crashed into me.
We see. Checo doesn't turn into an apex, runs wide.
He just turned into me.
Yeah, we saw.
There's a 5-second time penalty for Sergio Perez for causing a collision. Here's Lewis Hamilton trying to take the place away from Carlos Sainz, trying to go the long way round. Either way, he's forced Sainz away from the racing line. He'll try and do it in the next phase. That was a semi-strange one for Norris and Perez.
It's all getting strange. The overtake was very much after you, no after you, between those two. And in the end, Norris turned in on Perez and there was contact. Here comes Hamilton on Sainz.
Looking for the move around the outside. He'll scrub the speed off. Oh, that'll work. That'll work nicely. Hamilton goes the long way round at turn number 9 and gets past the Ferrari driver. That is a tidy way to improve your position up to 9th. Let's go again. Down, out of turn 5, the back straight, up to 200 miles per hour. Once again, Perez getting close, trying to make it work in the braking zone. Fights his way by to 4th position. That's bad news for Lando Norris. We have had late retirements here in the past. Oh, that's a nice dive to the inside. And we saw it from the nose cam as Sergio Perez gets by up to 3rd on the road. But that 5-second penalty will drop him back. Max Verstappen out of the final corner for the final time. Max Verstappen wins 19 Grand Prix in a single season. Amazing stuff. He wins the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Hamilton has an amazing opportunity to get by. Hamilton does get by, we believe. Oh, it was really close. He's up to 8th. Perez is in 2nd place, but Charles Leclerc will move up there. He will move up to 2nd position when the time penalty is applied, and George Russell crosses the line in 4th. Tsunoda will hang on to 8th place across the line, and it is an amazing end to that. Lap 58, Max Verstappen the winner.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome in. This is season 5. This is episode, I believe, this is number 42. Got to update that, of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2023 Abu Dhabi GP race review. As always, we are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network. And folks, we have crossed the finish line on the 2023 season. Is now in the books officially. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Deanna and Cody tonight. It's good to see you both. First off, how was your holiday, and how you doing tonight?
Mine was really busy. The Thanksgiving Day was probably the most relaxing, quiet part of it. It's nice just to hang out, eat some good food, watch some football. But then everything after that was nuts. Lots of friends, lots of outings, a little bit of work here and there. So, I'm not particularly rested from the weekend, but that's all okay.
Kind of opposite for me. It was nice and relaxing. I didn't do much, so it was good. Ate some good food. We watched the dog show, though. That's our big thing. So it was a good week, good weekend.
I guess you could say mine was probably in the middle of there, where it started out. Like, the Wednesday before was just really super stressful, and it didn't have to be, and that was just kind of crazy, but that's a work thing. The day of it, the engineering feat that I managed to pull of taking the 3 triple batch thing of the dish that I had, the green bean casserole, figuring out a way to get it into a cart, keep it hot, keep it wrapped, and get it from my corner apartment down the hallway, down the elevator, through the common area, into the car, and off to not grandma's house, but my sister's house, which is on the other side of town, as Cody can vouch for, and not spill anything. So I'm giving myself a gold star. I was driver of the day for Thanksgiving, if nothing else. But that's how we'll do that. But yeah, the rest of the weekend, pretty good. Lots of family, lots of stuff to do. Had a productive Sunday, if nothing else. Cody knows what I'm talking about there. So if you found our show, welcome. As David Croft would say, welcome along. You can find us, as always, on Twitter or X or whatever the heck that platform is still called, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube. At Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle on all of those. If you like what you're hearing or you like what you're seeing, do us a solid on YouTube. Click the like and or subscribe button. If you like what you're hearing and you're on your favorite podcasting app, and we are on a lot of them, do us a solid, click the 5-star button. Just helps us come up a little bit better in search results, helps us get our content to you a little bit quicker. You can email the show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you to that. You can peruse the website, www.outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. As a genuine thank you for all of our monetary supporters who have stuck with us this entire season. You guys are all amazing. Thank you so much to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of what we call the #OutlapF1Nation, you can see our link tree in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $1, $5. All of your donations going in to making the show better. Upgrading equipment that we need, upgrading the current equipment that we already have, making it better. I'm in the swing arm position tonight, so we've got all that all set up and working, and you know, it just enables us to do all the fun stuff that we like to do when we do like remotes and other fun stuff. So thank you so much to everybody who supports the show. The good folks at Manscaped, Christmas, as you know, is coming. So do us a solid. Use our code OUTLAP and take 20% off and free shipping. Might get you actually a little bit more. I've seen some 25% offers out there, but I know the R code, I think, sometimes will get you whatever the current promotion is. So take a look at that if you'd like to. Final sponsor, the F1Guide.com. Our buddy Vincenzo Landino, who's been on the show a couple times before, he has a shirt line, F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. If you are a Ferrari fan, I would highly recommend you check his stuff out, as he's a big Ferrari guy. Go ahead and check that out if you'd like to. Like I said, we're recording this. It's almost December, crazy enough. And it's at least not 8 degrees out like it was yesterday. But anyway. All right. So we will now turn our attention to our final race of the season, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. We'll start with our headline of the day. Cody, let you go first on this one. What you got, sir?
Sky's blue, grass is green. Max wins races in 2023. With the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, 2023 season is done, and Max won an astounding 19 out of 22 races, 4 out of 6 sprint races, in case you didn't hear. And it just, God, it's ominous for next year. I got to wonder if he could possibly do a repeat of such a dominant season. But it's amazing. It's one of the most dominant seasons we've ever seen, and I'm ready for some new winners.
All right, very good. I would agree with your last sentiment there. T, what's your headline?
Hit a similar vein. Congrats to Max for the single most dominant season ever. I pray to God that no one ever gets remotely close to those records ever again. I'm good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I want to cover another season where we're going, are they going to hit the Max Verstappen stuff? All right. Well, my headline is the Abu Dhabi track is just the equivalent of oatmeal. People can like oatmeal, but you only like what you put into it. And this track just is not good for, or it's not conducive to general racing. It can be good for the cars. The cars get to do all sorts of fun, interesting things, and they love to test here. But it's just not as good of a dessert after the fun that we had in Las Vegas, particularly with the battles at the front, because you already pretty much knew where that was going to end up, pretty much right after the first corner or the first lap. So, and again, we all kind of got what we all thought was going to happen. Max Verstappen takes the pole. Max Verstappen takes the win. Yay! All right. So yay. Yay. All right. So we will go back and we will recap everything that happened over the course of the weekend. We'll start with the qualifying recap. And here we go. All right, so for the final time, going out without setting a time because he could not stay within the track limits, that would be the number two of Logan Sargeant in the Williams. So P19 was Zhao Guanyu, P18 Valtteri Bottas, P17 was Kevin Magnussen, P16 Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. That was a surprise there. Advancing through to Q2 but going no farther, P15 was Daniel Ricciardo, P14 was Alex Albon, P13 Lance Stroll, P12 was Esteban Ocon, P11, but it's very surprising here, Lewis Hamilton not getting out of Q2. P10 was Pierre Gasly. The top 10 from 10 to 1. 10 was, I said, was Pierre Gasly. P9 was Sergio Perez. Bit of a shocker there. His final lap time was deleted. P8 was Nico Hülkenberg. P7, Fernando Alonso. P6, star of qualifying for me, Yuki Tsunoda in the AlphaTauri. Hello, good to see you there, sir. P5 was Lando Norris. P4, George Russell, other star of qualifying. P3, Oscar Piastri, did not get any lap times deleted for track limits this time, even though he checked a couple times. P2 was Charles Leclerc, and in P1, he just does it again. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, 123.445 the time. Thoughts on the qualifying?
Man, Logan Sargeant, I was hoping for his sake that he would be able to do a little better in this last race of the year, because all the rumors are flying. Is he going to keep his seat? Is he not going to keep it? I would really hate to lose our American representative in the sport. And yet, couldn't. It was all track limits, right? He was having a lot of struggling with the track limits. Couldn't put in an actual lap time. Starting dead last. Not a great start to the weekend for him.
Yeah, not great. I think the other one that's not great back there is Carlos Sainz, and that basically sunk Ferrari's battle for P2 before it started, although they did help themselves a little bit later, I'm sure we will talk about. But that he claimed it was traffic, but I don't know that there's really that much. I think Gasly was kind of there, but there's definitely enough room on track still. So I think just kind of an unfortunate lap for him. And in comparison to Leclerc, who's been really on in the past couple races, I think after the Sainz win in Singapore, Leclerc started to turn it around in that Japan. So, that was just a bit of an unfortunate one for him back there. After a second crash, not really his fault, but more the track's fault. So it's been a tough couple weeks.
Yeah, you almost want to give poor Carlos Sainz a hug and say, dude, it's not really that bad. We're really, really, really sorry. It's not like this. But Cody, to your point about Logan Sargeant, recency bias being what it is, and as of tonight, Williams has not confirmed that seat for anyone in 2024 yet. So, going to have to see. He didn't do himself any favors in the qualifying. His times, his pace was actually pretty good. He probably would have made Q2. I don't think there was any qualm about that. He just couldn't keep it within the confines of the track. Disappointment for him there. We talked a little bit about signs. Just runs over a bump in FP2 and spins out and destroys yet another car. Again, not necessarily anything that was his fault, or something you would expect. A bump that was then eliminated by the end of the day, according to all of the reports. So apparently, if you put a flaw in the racetrack, Carlos Sainz right now is going to find it. Mm-hmm. And that just leads to some very unfortunate circumstances for him. I was honestly surprised Lewis Hamilton did not make Q3. That was a bit of a shocker to me on that track, at a track that he knows very well. He usually goes very good at. Contrast that with George Russell getting it up there in P4. The Mercedes at least came to play for the P2 battle. It was all they could win, and they would certainly went out to go win it. So that was interesting. I got to talk about Yuki Tsunoda. I mean, that actually made the P7 battle, which you didn't think they were really going to be in contention for. Now that comes into play moving into Sunday because of that great result. We're seeing the AlphaTauris move more towards the Red Bull RB19 concept. Looks like that's going to be the baseline for all of the development next year. I think that is a team that you definitely need to pay attention to, whatever the heck they're called, whether they're Racing Bulls or whatever they're going to so be known bad. As.
I want is for them to go back to Toro Rosso, but...
Is that so hard? Come on. Racing bulls.
Clean and simple name, beautiful livery. It was just... Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It worked. But I think you and I are going to be disappointed in that when we actually get whatever the rebranding is. I really hope that's not what it is. But anyway. But good for Yuki. Guy who's had his struggles, whose team has been patient with him. And you contrast kind of what Yuki had gone through with what Logan Sargeant's gone through. And you can almost kind of draw some parallels where you almost say, well, you know, if you actually have a bit of patience in this world of now, and actually let a driver develop at the F1 level, sometimes you can get some results out. I would think if you're Logan Sargeant, you want to make the case for staying in F1, you point to Yuki Tsunoda and say, that's what I'm going to aspire to be next year. Whether or not he can do it, it's another thing, but I would say that's the argument that I'd make if I was him.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think there's just also no one else really out there at the moment that I think that they would want. Like, I mean, I guess you could take Liam Lawson, but I would imagine Red Bull would get them back. They would just lease him out for a year, and then you're stuck in the same position. You could do Mick Schumacher. I mean, he did have a couple years that didn't get better the second year. So I don't know if that's worth the risk. I think it's at least a known quantity. It allows them some consistency from this year, especially with getting James Valzin and all of that stuff. And then I think you kind of hopefully take this progress and reassess next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more of, I think 70% Logan will keep his seat at the end of the day. I think they'll stretch it out. I don't think they'll want to stretch it out too much. I think I hope we get something by the end of the year. That would at least make sense. But the fact that they let him do the young driver test on Tuesday, I think bodes well, because if you're trying to take and evaluate concepts into next year, you don't want to get feedback from a guy you're not going to be listening to next year. So for whatever good or bad, and he actually showed pretty well. I think he finished like in the top 10 of the times. Now, granted, he's going in the night session where other guys are going in the day session, but still, that's at least impressive enough. So at least on the last day, when track limits didn't matter, he showed well. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. All right. So Cody, any other thoughts on the qualifying before we flip over to the race?
You guys pretty much covered it all. I was very impressed with Yuki Tsunoda's qualifying. Very pleased that he looked ready to drag AlphaTauri kicking and screaming past Williams in the championship, as we're going to see. Didn't quite happen, which is a little sad, but he was really trying, and he put in his best effort.
Yeah, one last little bit. You know, kind of disappointing for Lando. Looked like he was definitely on for pole. Particularly since that banker lap that he did was on used tires, and then he comes into his fresh set of tires, and he was actually up through the first two sectors on Max's time, which didn't improve, and then a bit of a wiggle wobble in the third sector cost him 0.3, and that was pretty much all she wrote. That opens the door for Oscar Piastri to get back into the podium positions, at least in qualifying, Piastri was investigated for a potential impeding incident that was eventually cleared. There were no changes to the qualifying order between that and the race, as it turned out. But flipping over now to Sunday, we start as we are apt to do with our back markers, and that finds the Haas boys. Kevin Magnussen, P20, last on the road on the day. P19 was Valtteri Bottas. P18. His weekend just kept getting worse and worse and worse, and not necessarily any of it his fault. Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari, yikes. P17, Zhou Guanyu. P16, Logan Sargeant, so a little bit better there. P15, Nico Hülkenberg and the other Haas, so no points for them. P14 was Alex Albon, so no points for Williams either. And P13 was Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. Thoughts on the back markers? Cody, I'll let you go first.
You got to feel for Carlos Sainz in a race where it's coming down to the wire. Ferrari is so close and could potentially take P2 in the Constructors' Championship away from Mercedes. It's that close, and he unfortunately couldn't contribute anything to that second place this weekend. He you know, had the bad free practice, had bad qualifying in the race. They tried some stuff, pretty much were hoping for a safety car throughout the entire race, put them on hards, left them out there as long as they could, put them on more hards, left them out there as long as they could again, just praying for that safety car, praying for something to go their way. It never happened. Apparently, I never realized this, apparently you don't get a lot of safety cars in Abu Dhabi. Everyone remembers the one. apparently it's not a regular occurrence. So they held on as long as they could, but eventually they had to pit him for another compound of tires, and he was pretty much toast. So, yeah, I'm sure Ferrari would have been very happy getting a few points out of him to secure that P2, but it was not to be.
Yeah, Ferrari, I just adding on here. What they did with the strategy is frustrating, as you mentioned, with the safety car. It is, I think they said it was like a 40% chance. So I don't know that you rely on a safety car when it's under 50%. Like, that just doesn't feel like the right thing to do. But they started him on hards. He didn't make it very far, which, fine. But then they stuck him onto another set of hards, so they just locked him into the strategy and then just left him out there. They should have, I mean, even if they went hards, they should have, when everybody started that second pit stop cycle, pitted him again, even if it was kind of later in that cycle, throw him on mediums, give him a chance to do something. He's not going anywhere. Or medium or hards, go to the mediums, give him a chance to do some things, pit early, aggressively, hards at the end. Like, I just think there were a lot of different options that they could have taken that could have maybe gotten him scraping in the bottom of the points, but like they just were nowhere. And it was just really sad to watch him like sitting in those points, knowing that he was going to drop out. I also think they technically retired him at the end. And it was just bad, just sad and bad.
Yeah, it was an odd technical bit. I mean, he's listed as technically a DNF, even though he's in P18. Because he comes in, they had to use the two sets of compounds. So they boxed him on the last lap, put him on a set of softs. He goes out, he does an outlap, and then never crosses the checker, the line again. So they boxed him because the leader had already passed him, and it didn't matter if he finished the race or not. But what are you saving at this point? It's the last race of the season. You might as well let the guy at least cross the line and see the checkered flag. So that was confusing. We've talked many times on this show about the Ferrari decision desk. If there is one thing that Fred Vasseur has to work on over the course of the winter, it is, for the love of God, fix the Ferrari decision desk, please. Because there's a lot of good about this team right now if you look at them top to bottom. The cars are quick. The drivers are good. They definitely really good over the course of a lap. They got to work on some tire life issues. They know that. But you're ticking off a lot of good boxes. But the one thing that keeps coming up over and over and over again is, what are you doing when you're in under a pressure call? I don't get it. So yikes, that just didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I feel real bad for Carlos Sainz. I feel real bad that I picked him to get on the pole position. Even worse, that didn't go very well. I tuned into Friday morning and I went, I'm already screwed on that one. Moving on. And there we go. All right, so I guess we'll leave the back markers there. So moving into the midfield, where there was a lot of interesting stuff going on, for sure, in the midfield. So P12 saw Esteban Ocon. P11 almost getting into the points and would have possibly challenged Williams for P7 with that. Daniel Ricciardo in the AlphaTauri. P10 was Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. P9 was Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. P8, Yuki Tsunoda, the valiant attempt to get P7 falls just that little bit short, because P7 was Fernando Alonso, who will pass anybody and given any opportunity to do so. P6 was Oscar Piastri. P5 was Lando Norris. And P4 was Sergio Perez in the first Red Bull. All right, big thoughts on the midfield. Dee, we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, I guess let's start Lewis Hamilton. I think just a tough day. And again, in comparison to Russell, it just was not his weekend. He just wasn't having a good time with that car. He was constantly surrounded by the Alpines, which is just never, never good. I think he got brake checked by Alonso, which is a separate issue we can talk about. And that was just, it was just all a bit of a mess. And then I think to be battling at AlphaTauri at the end and not coming out in front of that car, I think he will be very, very happy to see this W14 sail off into the sunset. So yeah, just not a great weekend. Although I think those couple points did help them in the end. Well, I guess they were 3 points ahead, so.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think Lewis is very happy to see the W14 meet the end. Some of the post-race sound that I heard from Toto Wolff basically saying that they are going back and pivoting yet again. So they tried their zero side pod concept that didn't work. They tried to pivot from that and tried to make a hybrid of it. That didn't work. And so the fact of the matter is the car in Toto Wolff's minds is way too unpredictable. And so in order to try to get some predictability, they're starting over, and they've been starting over since like September. So going to be one of those teams to see. What do they bring out next year? Is it decent? Can it be competitive? Or do they go down the wrong path yet again? So yeah, lots of intrigue, lots of unknowns with a team that's usually, you know, solid, and you can tell what they're going to do every year. And Lewis Hamilton's not getting any younger, guys. So yikes. But anyway, that's my bit on Lewis. Cody, what's your any big thoughts on the midfield before we kind of go through a couple other things?
There was that collision between Sergio Perez and Lando Norris that ended up screwing Perez out of a podium. He looked to be performing really well, a lot better than his qualifying position would have led you to believe. Moving up his way through the field, ended up finishing second place on track, mostly because Leclerc let him by to try some last ditch effort strategy. But yeah, he had that move he was trying to make on Lando Norris, going up the inside. They both just kind of kept going and going and going through the turn and ended up colliding. It's kind of hard to tell from watching it whether, you know, Lando turned in because he was running out of track and had to turn at some point. Maybe Perez went a little too deep into the turn. But I've seen a lot of discussion about whether that 5 second penalty was deserved. It did screw him out of that second place, considering Norris didn't really take any damage, cut the corner after the collision. So he still ended up way out in front of Perez, which I think was, you know, pretty much would have just made it a racing incident. But he ends up getting the penalty, falls back to fourth after they cross the line. And it's just too bad. He seems to have, you know, he seems to be performing a lot better in these last bunch of races. And he just keeps getting screwed, like a little bit at the last minute. First, he gets past Alonso. Alonso gets past him. Leclerc gets past him at the very end of Las Vegas, and now here on for that second place, just can't make it happen. So I'm hoping he gets some better luck next year, and that he is able to find next year's car a little bit more agreeable.
I have a different view on the incident with Norris. I think watching the broadcast, and like maybe I need to watch it from a different angle, I don't know. I do not understand why Brundle was so like, this is not really Perez's fault. Because to me, it didn't look like he even teased that apex on the inside. And so I think Norris probably would have made that turn had there not been the collision anyway. So like, I'm okay with Perez getting the penalty there. I am annoyed that it decided P2 of the championship, essentially. But I don't hate that penalty. I think he just took too much speed going into the corner. He understeered into the side of him, and that was that.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it was from Lando's onboard, it definitely looks a lot more clumsy. I've tried to look at it from Sergio's onboard, I've looked at it from Lando's onboard, I've looked at it from the TV, you know, what the camera that was there. The camera that was there makes it look like it's more of a racing incident where you really can't tell who's where. When you look at it from Lando's onboard, it looks like Sergio is just not stopping. It looks like he's going to just keep on going unless Lando gets out of it. And he has to eventually somehow try to make that corner as well. So, and I also wonder if this was more, I hate to use it, but it feels more of a reputation penalty, if nothing else, against Sergio. Why? Because we saw the reckless move in Japan and we saw the reckless go for the overtake in Mexico. So I think if you're a steward and you're looking at that, and you've got this guy's recent history in your mind as you're making that call. Yeah, I mean, these guys are human. Maybe it's not by letter of the law a real penalty, but I think given his reputation, I could kind of see that happening. Yeah, it was fine. Lucky for Lando that it was in a spot of the car where it didn't take any damage, versus, you know, the Vegas race where, you know, Piastri gets clipped a little bit with what looks like nothing contact and then he ends up with a massive puncture. So, you know, I was happy for that. I didn't love Lando having to cut the corner, but I get why he did it. You know, at that point, you know, you might as well just go for it and throw it to the stewards and let them decide. But, you know, nothing more came out of it. Lando didn't have the pace to keep Sergio behind him regardless. It wasn't going to, and he didn't have enough pace to keep Sergio within 5 seconds anyway. So you knew it wasn't going to like make it right for Lando in any way whatsoever. It was just going to be, what did it do for Sergio? And, you know, as it turned out, Leclerc tries that interesting bit of, well, I'm going to try to drag you, put you into DRS, try the Singapore move, the Carlos Sainz move, and just did it kind of poorly and not well enough because he couldn't get enough in front of both Leclerc and Russell to make a difference for the P2 battle. Interesting call. That was Leclerc's call. Again, that didn't come from the Ferrari strategy desk yet again, where that would have maybe been interesting had it happened from that side. But, you know, alas, nothing more happened there. So, yeah, I mean, I was okay with a 5 second penalty. Certainly nothing any more than that. I was either racing incident or maybe a slight penalty for Checo there. Just to close the book on the McLaren versus Aston Martin battle, that ends up going in favor of McLaren because they outscore both the Aston Martins with P5 and P6 respectively on the day. D, any other thoughts on the midfield before we move into the podium?
I think just McLaren's just didn't have the pace for the Mercedes or the Ferraris or the Red Bulls. But the one thing I do want to say, we touched on Tsunoda a bit before, but I think underrated in the last few races because of what McLaren's done this season, that AlphaTauri has really turned it around from the beginning of the season. Granted, they probably have a little bit of an advantage with Red Bull, but yeah, I imagine that car is going to be way further up the grid next year. So,
yeah,
oh, yeah. And that advantage is just going to get even stronger with them driving essentially this year's Red Bull next year.
Yeah, I would put AlphaTauri or whatever they're called. Like I said before, I think that is a team you want to keep your eye on next year. What can they do? I think they're going to be horrifically annoying to those who have top three aspirations. I don't think they're going to be good enough to be in the top three necessarily themselves unless they just come out of the gate gangbusters a la Aston Martin and boom, they're the second quickest car because it's just the Red Bull concept and we're all just living in it. That could happen next year, but I do think they're going to be in that kind of annoying fifth, sixth, seventh, you got to try to pass one of them if you want to make the podium type situations. And I think they're going to make it tough on people. And I think you're going to see more than one race next year where they're going to be a factor in either who wins or who's on the podium for sure. So, yeah, I mean, for Franz Tost last race, I thought his star pupil or his last star pupil, Yuki Tsunoda, did well. I felt really bad. I understand why they put him on the one stop, but oh, that's so frustrating to have that much pace. And just have to watch it kind of fade away as the tire life just kind of goes away. That had to have been very frustrating, but a valiant effort proves just a couple points short, I think, for the AlphaTauri folks there. All right. So we will now move into the podium, and that podium saw George Russell in the Mercedes. That result good enough to secure P2 in the constructor standings. P2 was Charles Leclerc. With the Sergio Perez 5 second penalty, he gets moved back up to P2, despite giving the position up as part of strategy. And in P1, 17 seconds ahead. Wasn't 40 seconds ahead like I was afraid of, but it's still pretty darn dominant. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. Just astounding the amount of races. I think I saw a stat that said he scored 84.5% of the possible points you could score in a race weekend. I remember saying, we're going to judge this by taking the total potential and deducting. Well, guess what that total is? He only didn't score 45 points this season, and most of those were fastest laps. Yow.
My favorite stat was he could have not shown up after the summer break and still would have beaten Perez by a point. So there's that.
Yeah, it's astounding. Like I've seen, you can dissect his season in so many ways and come up with all the ridiculous ways that he still would have won the championship. I was seeing that you could have taken away his first half of the season. You could have taken away his second half of the season. He still, I think, would have won the Constructors' Championship for Red Bull either way. Yeah, it's just nuts. I think the best, or go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't do the stat justice. Hang on, I had it wrong. Max's final number is 92.7% of possible points. An 86.4%, that was his win percentage. As many races as there were in the entire 2013 season, Max won all of them. Wow.
Yeah, that breaks the winning percentage record that was set by Alberto Ascari when there was only 8 races in the season to compete in. So to have a higher winning percentage over 22 races is just, it's really something. As far as the race itself goes, gotta say, best part of the race for me was the very first lap. I was really rooting for Leclerc to get past Verstappen. I thought he had it several times around the lap, especially going into that first turn, and somehow just couldn't quite get it done. After seeing what happened at the first lap of Las Vegas, I was really kind of hoping too that Leclerc would be maybe a little bit more aggressive and try to shove Max off the track if it meant getting the lead and driving off for a minute. But he took a little bit more of the gentleman's approach, I think, and you know, he ended up bringing it back, getting the P2 at the end, which was an awesome result. You know, great podium performance. It ended up causing Leclerc to jump past Sainz in the driver's standings, so it worked out well for him. I just wish we could have had that little bit of hope for a little bit longer than one lap.
Yeah, I think Leclerc just kind of held off because it obviously mattered very much to both Ferrari and Mercedes, that P2. So I just don't think that fight was worth it for him in the end. But my thing I want to talk about with Leclerc is him trying to let Perez around and get that 5-second gap. I was kind of thinking this in my brain with about 5 laps left. So I was hoping that we were going to get there and maybe his team would help him along to do that. A couple laps earlier to give Perez a chance to kind of gap that out. I also think when he let him around, it was at the end of a straight. He should have probably stayed ahead of him, let him get the strip sheet into the DRS in the second straight. So why we didn't do that, I don't know. I know there was no reason in him holding up George because that was way too fine a line to try to get the 5 seconds him in and George out. But I just wish he would have tried one lap sooner. And I think he would have made it happen. But yeah, valiant effort. Again, Ferrari drivers doing their own work. So gotta love it.
Yeah, I saw more than one meme of Ferrari drivers with their strategists. And it's just 4 pictures of Carlos Sainz and 4 pictures of Charles Leclerc, because that apparently was the strategy team this year. Only get creative when it seems to work for them. But yeah, I mean, it was the right idea to try it. There was certainly nothing going to harm by trying it, because the worst that happens is maybe he finishes P3 if Russell gets him. If Russell gets him because he's quicker, well, then so be it. But yeah, just not executed well enough to really make that type of a move stick. But I loved the attempt. It certainly made the last couple of laps a little more interesting. But I think you're right. He needed to do it. At least one, maybe two laps earlier to really try to get to figure that out, to really expand that rubber band to get Perez up far enough in front of him to where that 5 seconds really wasn't going to matter. But yeah, it just wasn't, like I said, I love the attempt. It just didn't work. And because he was kind of out there by himself, because he didn't have any help from his teammate, because his teammate got screwed over because his team decided to not change tire compounds for what reason, I do not understand. Yeah, it was just not enough. But at least he made a good attempt at it. it's always interesting. You get towards the end of the season, you get to these battles and you see stuff you don't see the whole rest of the year. So interesting if they would have tried something like this earlier in the season, you know, especially when it comes down to 1 point like this did, or, mm-hmm. or 3 points as it turned out. But yeah, it certainly made the last couple laps at least interesting to watch.
Yeah. Really, really strong performance from Russell as well. It was vastly better than Lewis Hamilton, which, you know, we haven't seen a lot this year. It seems like throughout the year, George Russell's been the one who tends to be struggling in the car more. Hamilton has struggled with qualifying, but seems to do a lot better with race pace and has had a lot of success there. But yeah, in this one, Russell definitely had the better hold on the car, much better in qualifying, very strong during the race. I think you got to give him credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. He was fast out of the box, Russell was. I mean, even in the FP1, which is held in the heat of the day, you know, and you had the 10 young drivers in it, but he was clearly the class of the field in the morning session. And because of the Sainz spin and because of the fact that he destroyed a lot of the Armco barrier that's there, they had to red flag the session and lost almost 35, 40 minutes of the FP2 session. So by the time they got FP2 going again, and then Nico Hülkenberg brought out a red flag, very poorly timed there. They realistically only had about maybe 10 minutes of running in actual race or qualifying conditions. So nobody knew what the tire life or anything was going to be because of it. You wonder what would have happened had, you know, those things not happened. Does that affect the result? Does it affect how some people managed or didn't or mismanaged the tire strategy here? But, you know, things we'll never know. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, Cody, about the opening lap move, yeah, I was really wanting Leclerc to stick it. Like, come on, man, just stick it in there. And it looked like he definitely had it. But that's what I hate about this track. If you don't get it done in one of those two places, that's it. There really isn't any other spot where there's a legit overtaking opportunity. And you're not making a move on the outside and now turn 9 into that spoon corner now. That's just not the line. You have to be on the inside there to have any chance. But, and that was once that lap one was done and Max was in the clean air, off he went. Woo, bye. Yeah. All right, I guess we'll leave the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix here. I think this is a good place to kind of wrap that up. We will take a quick break. We will re-rack. We will now do the final time. We'll tell you where all the driver standings ended up. There are some changes here from last week, and we'll recap all where the points finish in the constructors. No real changes, but we'll tell you where everybody finished. We'll then talk about, we'll open it up to our favorite segment, the Fanny Mail segment. We'll get your takes on what you saw this weekend and of the season overall. We'll hand out some awards, and I have done the calculating. On our predictions game, I have actually gone back to the beginning of time, now just to Bahrain, have figured out where we were. It's closer than we all thought, at least on my perspective. It's definitely closer than we all thought, but we will reveal where all that ends up. We'll put on some final thoughts on the season and call it a season. But come on back. We'll get into all that in just a bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
Welcome back in. This is season 5. This is episode number 42 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are putting a bow on the 2023 F1 season as well as the Abu Dhabi GP. It's our Abu Dhabi Grand Prix race review. You've got Andy. We've got the triple box going tonight. We've got Andy, Deanna, and Cody tonight. So we just wrapped up our review of the race itself. And now we're going to the more interesting part, hopefully, where everybody fell out in championship order. Cody, recap the top 10 of the drivers, and I'll come in with the teams.
All right. At the close of the 2023 season, we still have Max Verstappen, long ago secured the championship, but he's finishing out the season with a record 575 points. Like you said, Andy, it's not about how many he scored. It's about how many he didn't score. Right behind him, though, making up Red Bull's first 1-2 in the drivers' standings ever since they've been Red Bull, Sergio Perez bringing it home in second with 285 points. And Lewis Hamilton already had third place secured going into this weekend. He finishes out the season with 234 points. And then a really, really close result between the next four drivers, fourth through seventh. Fernando Alonso ends up bringing it home in fourth, just held out Charles Leclerc. They both finished with 206 points, but Fernando Alonso gets the fourth place. They tied on second place finishes. I believe Fernando Alonso had the edge in third place finishes, which gets him the tiebreaker. Charles Leclerc finishes right behind him in fifth place. Lando Norris, very strong resurgence from him and McLaren throughout the latter part of the season. He finishes just 1 point off of them. So he's in sixth place, but with 205 points. And then just behind them, Carlos Sainz, I believe ahead of all these guys going into the weekend. Unfortunately, he falls behind all of them. He sits in seventh place with 200 points after not scoring any points on the weekend. Back in eighth place, George Russell finishes up with Mercedes with 175 points. Oscar Piastri, the second McLaren, in ninth place with 97 points. And Lance Stroll manages to hold on to 10th place for Aston Martin with 74 points.
All right, so the team's standings finalized after the 2023 season. P1, no surprise here, Red Bull Racing, Honda, 860 points. That record hopefully will last for a very long time, because I don't want to see this level of domination either. P2, Mercedes, with all the pivots and everything, they still managed to come home in P2 in the constructors, 409 points. P3 is Ferrari. They check in on final total with 406 points. P4, McLaren, Mercedes, they finished the season, 302 points. Second half, one of the better ones I've seen. I can't remember a resurgent team in mid-season like that in a long time. P5, Aston Martin, darling of the first half of the season, could not get it done late. They took the upgrades off. They managed to get back in the points a bit, but they finish on 280 points. Still up for them from where they were last year, so that's good for them. P6 is Alpine. They check in with 120 points. P7, Williams manages to hold on despite scoring nothing here. They hold on. Thank you, Alex Albon. 27 of the 28 points scored for Williams this season. So they hold on to P7 in the constructors. P8, AlphaTauri, all the upgrades, all the new floors, not quite enough to get them to the P7 promised land, but they come in with 25 points. P9, Alfa Romeo Ferrari, they come in. They end the season with 16 points. And in P10, last, but maybe not least, they all score points this season. They all score double points this season. That is Haas Ferrari. They finish the season on 12 points. All right, so you've heard our takes on the Abu Dhabi weekend. We now open it up to our favorite segment of the night, the Fanny Mail segment. Deanna, you are here, so you get to do it. Is your time to shine. I was asked who won the race as to who clicked the button first. Rachel Fleming beat the Formula by 3 laps this race. So Formula, you got to get it in probably before the checkered flag. I told you Rachel was going to do that, but Dee, it's your time to shine. Take it away.
All right, and so Rachel Fleming starts us off, and it is a long one, so here we go. So Rachel Fleming says, well, that was Abu Dhabi. I think the outcome was pretty obvious when Brendel said on the formation lap that Charles Leclerc's race wasn't with Max today. When he was second on the grid, I suspect I wasn't the only person who groaned when I heard this. I was thinking about the cost cap punishment that Red Bull had. I presume it might affect them in 24, because if it affected the car this year, well, it'll be the same result as this year. Well, tensions are running over at Alpine, not exactly Prost and Senna, though, are they? I would just tell them both to grow up, not really fighting for much. As for the season, it would have been an amazing season if Max Verstappen wasn't there. So many disappointing performances. I'm going to call out Perez, Stroll, Bottas, even George Russell, even though I love George. I would say that Stroll and Perez have the most to answer for, though Perez still scraped second. Big shout out to Lando, Oscar, and Fernando for doing their best to try to stop Thanos, and Sainz for actually stopping him. Well, hopefully we'll actually have at least a bit of a title fight next year. Thank you guys for the podcast this year. Hope you guys have a great offseason. Personally, I have football, soccer to you guys to keep me going.
Yeah, we were Oh, I was going to say, we were talking in the break about, at least for Chicago, the bleak outlook.
Yeah.
You know, D's got Duke basketball to look forward to. All of the local Chicago teams, either last or second to last in all of the respective standings. So it's going to be a long, cold, snowy, probably winter for this part of the country. I may take up English football and find me a new team. So that may be not a bad idea there, Rachel. But yeah, as respect, we talked about kind of, you know, after lap one, it was really not much of a race for the front. And Charles had bigger things on his mind necessarily than trying to secure a race win. If they wreck after the lap one, if he takes Max to the end and they both wreck, you know, and Ferrari doesn't come home in P2 anyway, because of that, we're talking about a whole lot of different other stuff. Interesting that you brought up the cost cap. I hadn't thought about it in a bit of a time, but I think that it's going to be, if it's going to affect anything, it's going to affect the 24 car, because that's where the actual encumbrance on the wind tunnel time was. You know, I've heard a lot of theories that, you know, at some point you got to have some diminishing return on this formula. So if everybody's either got to come together or, you know, if they're still 20 seconds clear of the field next year, everybody's really gotten it wrong. So I think it's on the competition, not necessarily what Red Bull is going to do. I still think they're going to be solid no matter what Adrian Newey pops out, because he's Adrian Newey and that's what he does. I didn't really see much about the tensions in Alpine, but we know Ocon and Gasly have never really gotten along with each other. And some of the infighting has got to stop with that team. That's a team that needs a direction. Otherwise, they're just kind of just wallowing there. They've made some changes. We'll have to see what happens. I've heard one of the guys at Alpine may be going back to MotoGP because that's kind of where his specialty was. We'll have to see that. In terms of who you're calling out, I mean, we've chronicled the struggles of Checo Perez. Lance Stroll is not a favorite on our podcast. We know that. Valtteri Bottas, other than having a wonderful calendar and raising a lot of money for charity, I can't really mention a whole lot of good on-track performances for him this year. And George Russell, we've talked about probably the quietest struggle bus, that I've seen, because nobody really talked about it. Hopefully he can bounce back next year. You know me, I'm a big Lando fan, so I'm super excited for what is still to come from that guy. He's still got some things to work on, but there's definitely a whole lot of, I think, seminal talent there. Oscar Piastri, like I said before, if there's a guy who I want to operate on me, if I'm like dying in an emergency room, I want that guy to come in with that mentality, and he's going to save my life, because that's just what he does, and not think twice about it. And Fernando Alonso at 40, whatever years old he is still freaking good at driving a race car. Amazing level of talent there. It just feels like if he ever understood the politics of the sport a little bit better, what could have happened, you're going to look back on that career and go, oh man, what could have been? Because he's still really, really good.
Yeah, I think that was probably my highlight of the season, other than Max being Super Max, was getting to see Fernando come like so close, actually winning races again. I would have loved it if he actually did. I think highlight of the season could have easily been Monaco if he had pole. But alas, that's not how it went. Thank you, Rachel, for being such a frequent contributor to the show. And as far as other sports go, my other favorite sport behind Formula One is baseball, and that was wrapped up even before Formula One, so I'm just screwed until spring.
Yeah, I think you guys did a pretty good summary on that one. So thank you, Rachel, as always. So moving on to the formula. They said that's the 2023 season all wrapped, the greatest individual season in history by Max, and it still somehow feels underappreciated. The only real spice to this race was the fight for P2 and the constructors. Vegas being as good as it was made this one feel quite flat. It's all good, though. I'm happy to have witnessed the season Max had, but once is enough. Hopefully we get a better fight next year. Hopefully I beat Rachel one last time this year, and I'm sorry to say you didn't. But yes, I do agree. I pray to God we have a better title fight.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree with that. I want to see some other people on the top step of the podium. I want to see some other constructors up there. I want to hear a different national anthem so we can help your help your kid realize that that's not what happens at the end of a race just by default. But to your point, I think you make a great point about that this season will feel underappreciated. And whenever anybody is dominant, I mean, I lived through the Jordan years of 96, 97, 98. I lived through the 72-win Chicago Bulls season. If you weren't in Chicago, you hated basketball because you just knew that they were going to come and they were just that good. And they could – and there was – I'll never forget. It was a game that they lost, that they were getting their behinds kicked by 30 points. They erased the deficit, actually took the lead but didn't win. And I just said, this team's unstoppable. Even though they lost that game, I said, because you just don't do that. You just don't see that. And that's what you're going to say about this season when you're going to look back on it. Unfortunately, I think the only way to appreciate it, it's got to age a bit like a fine wine. I think when you look back 5, 10, 15 years from now, if we don't see that dominance and we see more of what is a traditional F1 type curve, you're going to look back on the season and go, this is as good as 89. This is as good as all those other, you know, crazy dominant years. And it's a record that, like we've all said, hopefully is never touched.
Yes. I don't think we're going to see more points scored unless they change the point system or add like 5 more races. Yeah. And
but we're getting 2 more next year.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah. Hopefully Max doesn't win. Like
we're on our way.
But yeah, I agree. One of the most dominant seasons ever. There's a million ways to argue it with all the stats. And yeah, just like with the, you know, really dominant years of say like Michael Schumacher, Sebastian Vettel, in season, it's really boring. Like you get sick of seeing the same person win all the time. In hindsight, you look back on it and say, wow, like they were in their prime. They were destroying everyone else, driving one of the best cars around. Yeah, it takes a little time to appreciate.
All right. Finally, from Dave Doherty, he asks, is it safe to say that Checo's seat is safe for 24 and your thoughts? I guess I'll just jump off with this one here. I think Checo 100% is in that seat to start 24. Red Bull being Red Bull, will it stay that way? I don't know. I think he has to be, if this car is as dominant as it is, he does have to be comfortably P2, or I think they take the leap with, I would say most likely Sonoda at the rate we're going, but a lot can change by mid next year. But yeah, I think it's safe for now. I don't know 100% that he makes it to the end of 24.
Yeah. I'd say unless he really, really underperforms next year, that he'll be, I think he'll be around for the whole season because, you know, we're kind of looking at all the flaws that he's had this year, the poor qualifying, the mistakes during the races, you know, people wondering whether he's got what it takes to compete against Max, which, you know, spoiler alert, he doesn't. But he did still finish P2 in the championship, secured, you know, Red Bull's first ever 1-2 in the driver standings. I mean, there's been other drivers who have tried, you know, Mark Webber, whole slew of drivers, you know, second drivers to Max. None of them could, you know, pull off such a performance, I guess. And so I think, yeah, unless he really underperforms, he's going to be around for all of next season. Now, I believe his contract is up at that point, and I definitely don't see it being renewed. Unless he turns into like super Sergio, which I don't see that happening either. I agree with you that, you know, Tsunoda with how he's been developing pretty strongly at AlphaTauri, especially this year, is probably next in line to get that seat. Hopefully we don't see another, you know, Gasly, Albon, Kvyat situation where it's just a revolving door and, you know, Yuki Tsunoda's around for one season and then gets kicked out. But we got a couple years, I think, before we get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, I forget the name, the movie, but it's one of the Daniel Craig James Bond ones where this guy who's taken over and is now like the dictator president, and he goes, "Well, congratulations, you get to be the dictator president, and if you don't do as I tell you to do, you're gonna find yourself dead in the back with your willing replacement staring at you, all ready to take your seat. And congratulations, Sergio Perez. That's your situation for next year. You get the seat. Congratulations. But you have your willing and able-bodied replacements all staring at you in Yuki Tsunoda, in Liam Lawson, in maybe Daniel Ricciardo. Red Bull has a plethora of options at their disposal at any time that they can pull if Sergio does not perform and does not perform well early. He's got to come out of the gate quick. He's got to establish himself. Not necessarily, it doesn't have to be on Max's level, but he's got to be the dominant P2 right away. Otherwise, they have no qualms about doing anybody dirty, especially in the last year of a contract, and they don't owe Checo anything, and Checo doesn't owe them anything. So the thing that makes Checo probably good and willing to be in that seat is he doesn't owe his career to Red Bull, but Red Bull can turn around and do the same thing back to him, and don't think that they're not going to. They shut Helmut Marko up for the last three weekends of the season, but he's going to be back, and he's going to be having microphones put in front of him, and betting if Checo's not performing, he's going to say something, and something may very well happen next year. So I don't know if he makes it all the way through 24 unless he's come out of the gate gangbusters. He's got those first five races are critical for Checo Perez next year.
That's just one of my favorite things, Helmut Marko with microphones.
And that's why they're there. That's exactly why they're there. All right, so thank you, especially to these three, to Rachel Fleming, to The Formula, and to Dave Doherty. You guys have been amazing to interact with on all forms of social media all year long. If any one of you wanted to grab a microphone and hop on and do a segment with us, we would be more than willing to try to make that happen. So it's been great. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. You guys are a part of the show. Because of this. So thank you so much for all your support all year long. All right. So now we will transition and we'll move into our awards. And we will start with the Rubbish Award. Cody, I'll let you go first. Your cat might have something to say about what he didn't like this season, on this weekend. But we'll let you take a stab at it. What you got?
Yeah, he more like has something to say about the butterflies that are hanging up on the wall, which has got me just a touch worried. But my rubbish award is going to go to that Perez-Norris collision. For everyone who's watched it, it seems like everyone falls into one of two camps. You either think it's a bogus penalty, or you think it's crappy driving on Perez's part. And in either instance, it's going to be rubbish.
All right, very good. D, what's your thoughts?
I have to get one more in for the FAA. For A, the whole goggle thing in the middle of the race, penalizing every single team, and we're like all of these different investigations are popping up, and you're like, what on earth is going on? Is everybody about to get disqualified? And it's just, no, put your stupid goggles on. Anyway, that was kind of dumb. And then the second was for the radio statement for Perez. Perez said, like, the stewards are a joke instead of the stewards' decision is a joke. And so he got an investigation and a reprimand and all of that fun stuff. So anyway, I just think that was a bit unnecessary, all things considered. So yeah, gotta love it. Them just making noise to make noise, really.
It kept the F1 documents bot account working that much overtime at the end of the season, if nothing else. I didn't really have anything that really annoyed me. I think, D, you've got a couple good ones there with the FIA. They're always a candidate. But I'm going to bring this out just to the bump that caused Carlos Sainz to spin out. Like, Carlos Sainz, I feel like the poor guy, especially after Las Vegas, the guy needs a hug. But spinning out in FP2 really screwed up that weekend for a whole lot of teams. We'll never know what would have happened if we actually had decent data. Did it lead to a better race? Did it lead to a worse race? We never know. So that was probably the thing that annoyed me the most. The course of the weekend of being awake for FP2 and not watching any running. All right. So we'll move on to analysis paralysis. Cody, I'll let you go first on this one. What you got?
My analysis paralysis goes to Ferrari, waiting for the safety car that never came. I think it's pretty much the definition of analysis paralysis. They put them out there on hards, waiting for a safety car. Hards ran out. What do? We're sticking to it. Throw on another set of hards, get into the next round of pit stops. Yeah, we're going to keep sticking to it, even if it completely screws you over. We're just going to hope for that, and it never happened. So, yep, the paralyzed analysis.
D, are you doubling down on Ferrari here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got the FA in one, so I got to get Ferrari in the other. So, yep, I fully agree. And I think my biggest frustration is that, I mean, I guess – teams a lot of times do it as a last resort, hanging out for the safety car. But my biggest annoyance was not letting Sainz have a chance to do it on his own, to do it with the actual driving bit. There's just so many other strategy calls that they could have made that would have given him an opportunity to try to make a difference. And he just did not get that. And so I just think they relied too much on like the universe when they could have tried for strategy. So, you know, Ferrari doesn't know how to do that. So anyway.
No, I totally get you there. Mine is a bit of an oddball. Like, I don't think it was the wrong call with what they were doing. I just felt so bad for poor Yuki Tsunoda after leading for a few laps on that one stopper.
Oh, yeah.
And then watching the car just slowly fading. I felt so bad that they had to hang him out on that type of a strategy. That just sucks because you can't fight it. There's nothing you can do. I didn't listen to a whole lot of his radio. I'm sure he was annoyed in pure Yuki Tsunoda fashion. And I wish that it would have maybe even come out and worked. It just didn't. I'm happy for Williams that they get P7. That's really good for them. But I thought that it was a valiant effort. It just came up short. But I didn't love the strategy of the only guy on a poor one-stop strategy when everything about the tire deck said it was a two-stopper minimum. All right, so we'll move into the dark horse of the day. Dee, I'll let you go first on this one. What you got?
So I guess I'll kind of continue what you're talking about, and I will go with Tsunoda. I think, A, his effort in qualifying was amazing. And then the effort to bring it home. A, he did bring it home on a one-stop strategy. He was the highest of the finishers for the one-stop strategy. So I think that was very good. And he held off Lewis Hamilton on the final lap. So I think all of that was really great. And he gave AlphaTauri the best shot at them possibly getting seventh. And then, as you mentioned, him leading those laps, that was great. A great send-off for Franz Tost. So overall, the most, I think, entertaining race of the day.
Yeah. Cody, what you got for Dark Horse?
Same thing. Yuki Tsunoda for giving AlphaTauri their best shot at that P7 in the championship. He really gave it his all, ran up front for a little while. Unfortunately, he sunk back as those tires wore out. But, you know, realistically, you know, he was only a couple positions away from pulling that out for them, and it just didn't quite materialize, which is unfortunate. But even so, still, you know, that AlphaTauri with how it's looked throughout the season, you know, even coming home P8 and getting some good points made for, you know, a really good race for him. And yeah, a great send off.
Yeah, so I'm going to give it to two drivers. One will be Yuki Tsunoda. I totally agree with you guys. Did a lot better with what he was given than I thought he was going to do. Is qualifying in P6, best for him. That's a show moment, and good for him. And that's something that hopefully he can build on next year, because he's going to need to, because again, there's four seats between Red Bull and AlphaTauri and like six drivers who could be sitting in those seats. So the spinning game of roulette starts now. And everything that you show is important. So good on you, Yuki Tsunoda, showing when you needed to. And I'm going to also give it to George Russell, because this is a guy who I thought has been on the struggle bus for a good part of the year. And particularly the difference between him and Hamilton was very, very pronounced here. So this was a George Russell weekend. Good on him. I know he wasn't feeling very well. I think he said in the car he was hacking up a half of a lung. Looked like half the paddock has, it's not COVID, but it's welcome back to winter grunge type of thing. And they've all been traveling together. So I think the best thing that they'll want to do is break away and all get over their respective ailments. But George Russell, for gutting one out and for making it happen for Mercedes to get P2, dark horse of the day there. And driver of the day, if this isn't a sweep, I don't know what is. But Cody, what you got?
You know, it's getting a lot less stylish with time to chant Max, Max, Super Max. And I imagine that it's just going to get even less stylish if he keeps it up next year. So got to get one more. And Max, Max, Super Max, he is the driver of the day, driver of the season, driver of many, many seasons, you know. One of the strongest that we've seen, and it's really cool to see.
Dee, what's your thought on driver of the day?
Yep, I'm also going with Max, who won by 18 seconds in a car that has not been upgraded since about July. So that bodes well for us all.
Yeah, it is the Max Award for a reason. The fact that he's able to do this, the fact that the car is as reliable as it is. A funny factoid that I actually learned on because we've had these engine freezes, one of the things that all the engineers have said is there's no longer that drop between the fresh engine and an old engine, that it'll keep going and it'll keep putting out the same output of power, even if it's an old engine. So the fact that I don't think we got through a season, I don't think we saw very few other than the obvious, but we didn't have the big 10 place engine drops. We didn't have the big 5 place engine drops this season. So if nothing else, all these engineers have made these damn power units really, really reliable. And again, with a freeze for the next two seasons, it's going to come down to the drivers in the boxes and you know, on the track battles, because these cars are not breaking anymore unless you hit them in just the wrong spot. So, but anyway, my driver of the day, driver of the season, Max Verstappen, I mean, running away and hiding and in his own universe, existence, dimension, whatever you want to call it. This was his year. We will probably have to, it will only take time to look back on this and to appreciate how freaking good this was. But one's enough. I'm really done listening to the Dutch national anthem. I want somebody else to win the first race next season, please. All right. I have some sound for this one. As we would say, let's see if this will actually work. I have gone back to the beginning of the season and I have retabulated the results. So coming into this weekend, so here's the thing. We were actually tied 8.5 to 8.5 going into Mexico. So we're talking about our predictions game. We were tied going into the last three rounds. Cody took Brazil. Cody then took Las Vegas by 1 point. So he wins the championship. And he wins the Abu Dhabi weekend. He scores 4 points this weekend. He got the quali time, the race lap time, because you were faster. P1 on the podium, and you got the P4 prop bet. So good for you there. I got 3 points this weekend. I got P1 on the podium, the P2 prop bet, and the P4 prop bet as well. So I tip my cap, sir. Well done on the predictions game. I'll have to get you a little trophy so that you can display it proudly. It'll give me something like interesting right to do.
For all of
yeah, I was going to say, exactly. Yeah, somewhere where you got to put it. So,
a little plaque to hang on the wall right there.
Yeah. I will have to. The good news is now this is a fun project that I can do in time for Christmas when I see you, and I will present you with your winner's trophy, sir. I can't get the one back from John. That's somewhere in the Carolina hinterlands. So I'll have to find one for you. But we'll make good. I promise I will make good. And we'll get you that. So you, sir, get the. Oh, no, it's not going to play. Of course not. Why not? Why not have one more of these? Ah, forget it.
You're doing so good.
I know. Ah.
Oh, we all know how this goes, too. It's going to play in like 5 minutes.
It's going to play in like 30 seconds, so I'm going to turn it off. Okay. It was going to be clapping, so congratulations. Golf clap.
We can do that one.
Exactly. All right. Well done, sir. So I guess that's kind of the end of our rundown. Big thoughts on the end of the season. We've got a lot for off season. We only have, I think, 3 months. We've got 90 days before I think we go testing yet again. But any final thoughts on anything this season before we hop on out?
Yeah, I think just a comment on Max's season, because I feel like on here I've just been frustrated that he's winning. But really to say that it is absolutely insane what he's accomplished. And I truly don't think it is physically possible for us to see what he's done this season. The amount of luck that he had on top of and retirements, I mean, that is a small portion of it. I think so much is his own personal ability, but like the weather, all that stuff that was thrown at him, he overcame literally every single challenge that he could have had. And I think it was just truly the most impressive single season ever. And I think in the exact opposite way that 2021 is unforgettable as one of the greatest championship battles ever, this is why we'll never forget the season, because of how incredibly dominant Max has been. So while it's been a little bit frustrating as a fan at times, I think you can't help but kind of marvel at what he's accomplished. So I'll say my piece and I'll move on, and I will be sad when he wins again.
Well, my end of the season critique here is going to kind of lean into that. You were saying that it's frightening that Red Bull car really hasn't been upgraded much in a long time, and he's continued to dominate. So makes you wonder how much Red Bull has sunk into next year's car. And if, you know, even if everyone does catch up, will they catch up to whatever the new car is? So, you know, it's ominous. I've got a little bit of a sinking feeling that we're going to see this for another two seasons until the regulations get shaken up. And by that point, we're going to be, you know, if this keeps happening, we're going to be really, really, really sick of the Dutch national anthem.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of said it before. I know that this is going to be one of those. This is going to be just like you said, Deanna, when you talk about 21 and you're going to tell, you know, people 20 years from now, oh, I remember that season. It was so epic. You're going to have to look back on this and you're going to have to go, I remember that season. I watched every race. I watched all these people try to take their best shots, and this guy just flicked them off like flies, and it didn't matter. I think that's how we're going to look back on this, and it's going to take time. But that doesn't mean that there still wasn't fun. I mean, the British Grand Prix was amazing. The USGP that we were at was amazing. You guys got to see me go full fanboy for 25 laps there. And but that's why we do it, was for those moments, and it's for that stuff. I have enjoyed doing this again this season. It has not been an easy season. We've all had schedules and family and things that come up. James is not here, unfortunately. You know, he's had his first child, and you know that changes your life. And you know, same thing with John. He's got a wife and two kids at home, so you know that changes your life. It changes your priorities. It changes your ability to be able to do this. But thank you to both of you for carving out time to do this with me when you guys can, and for making the time to do it. This is so much fun to do. I look forward to it. Like, I don't have a problem the fact that these agendas are 12 pages when I do them, but I've gotten better at them and you know, popping them out, because I know we're going to have fun and we're going to enjoy it. And I thank you to the audience, to anybody who wants to actually listens to us. Thank you so much. It's such a fun thing for us to do. We're grateful for your support of us. We want to get better for you. We take criticism pretty well. We try to make, you know, things a little bit better every time. That's what we're always trying to do. It's a hobby for us. This is not going to be a second career. I've come to that kind of conclusion in my life. But it does feel good to have a legit community out there. So thank you so much again. I just feel like that's kind of where I'm at with everything, but I'm hoping next season there are things to look forward to. I am so interested in what my McLaren boys are doing next year. They've got new people coming in. The wind tunnel's fully up to go. If there's anybody that's primed to be the first contender, it's those guys. Now, they can get it wrong just like any team can, but that's where my focus is. We're going to have car reveals next year. One of the interesting things is, you know, we're going to see, you know, who can come out of the gate fast next year, who's going to be off the pace next year. You know, this sport is a boomerang. You got risers and fallers, you know, everywhere you look. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of my two cents for the end of the season. So thank you again, everybody. And we'll head on out. I don't know when the next one of these will be. If let's put it this way, if there's Andretti news that breaks, we may call an emergency podcast to talk about that. But until then, enjoy your Christmas, everybody. I think that's definitely it for us, probably for the end of the year. Like I said before, when we did our Thanksgiving one, hug the relatives you like, hug the relatives you don't like. That's what these holidays are for. It's about being together. Stay safe. And we'll see you all next season, and we will be re-racking ready to go, because there's a whole lot of fun to talk about in 24. So, again, for everybody associated with the show, for Cody, Deanna, for James, for John, it's been Andy. Love doing this as always. And as always, folks, stay safe and may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.